It's been a challenging week. This week we saw several deaths, which reminds us of two things. One, the severity of COVID-19, and the other, how insidious it can be. And I want the families of those that we have lost to know how much the state is with you and how much we mourn for the loss of seven Wyoming citizens. Today I want to relay to you our transition plan that seeks to ease some of the restrictions while continuing to protect public health. I've said before, this will not be a light switch. We are building a plane as we are flying it, and with your help, and I stress this, with your help, we'll keep it in the air. You know, we'll be taking very slow, incremental, and thoughtful steps on how to ease these restrictions in Wyoming. And I want to share the outline of Wyoming's plan as well as some of the criteria that will be considered to be used during guiding our future decision making. And I want to reiterate that this will be a balanced approach that will be driven by two guiding principles: public safety and allowing our people to get back to work. But we need to slowly relax these restrictions and get ourselves ready for the new normal of business in 2020. This easing will go through a very thoughtful process and will be measured with positive progress. That's why it remains critical for citizens to continue to follow the public health guidance that has been issued, and I think you will find today that this will be something of a relief. So here's how it goes. Before the current public health orders expire on April 30th, we will modify them in order to allow us to move into a next phase. The new orders, which we plan to release next week, will continue through May 15th, with some easing of restrictions on certain businesses. The orders will allow county health officers to submit requests for variances from those orders on a county-wide basis. Variances will be considered based on local health conditions in the county, and this may mean that some counties have different restrictions based on what's happening with objective data in each county. It's important to remember that as these variances go into place, that we understand that there are considerations we have to consider across county lines and across state lines. And that is why I have been communicating constantly with Governor Ricketts of Nebraska, Governor Noem of South Dakota, Governor Bullock of Montana, Governor Little of Idaho, Governor Herbert of Utah, and Governor Polis of Colorado. Businesses that will likely initially be allowed to reopen under the new orders with operational modifications necessary to protect the health of customers and employees will include barbershops, as I mentioned last week, cosmetologists, and gyms. There are, I know, questions about opening bars and restaurants, and with input from the business task force, we are continuing to refine our plans to address these types of businesses. It is critical that we be measured in our approach, particularly given the additional health risks associated with these businesses. You know, I will say, here in Wyoming, we know that if you put your garden in before the last frost, you can lose that entire garden. And that is why we're being as careful as we are, to make sure that we make constant, steady progress, that we avoid any chance of a resurgence, and that we open our businesses like restaurants, barbershops, cosmetologists, and others as quickly as we can and as safely as we can. At this time, we're going to put up on display the COVID-19 metrics dashboard that we have developed in coordination with the Department of Health. This dashboard has also been provided to the counties so they can use it to help guide their decision-making process that was shared with them earlier today. These metrics we are going to use break down into two areas: trends of COVID cases and hospital capacity. You can see there are six metrics listed on this chart, and I'm going to have Dr. Harris walk you through them to provide a better understanding of what they mean and how they will contribute to our decision-making when it comes to easing orders. What I will say is that all states are looking at ways to do this a little bit differently, some on dates and some on progress. We are focusing on progress. And when I see the work that Dr. Harris has done, the fact that she has done such an outstanding job in Wyoming, where we have, and I have to tell you, I've been constantly calling our industries and our businesses, people are working today. Our coal miners are working. Our trona miners are working. Our oil and gas miners, when they have the jobs they do, and those are related more to prices outside of Wyoming than in, they're working. Our sawyers are working. Our ranchers are working. But we need our country to get back to work again. Our country really needs to have a solid economy, and that will bring Wyoming back. Dr. Harris has been extraordinary in her leadership on this topic, and Dr. Harris, I'd like to introduce you now to go through these metrics. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor Gordon. First, let me say that I realize many people are weary of this pandemic and the toll it's taken on our lives. I want you to know that I do understand. But at the same time, I have to be honest and remind everyone that it's not over yet, and it's not going to be over when our current orders expire on April 30th. And as we move through these next stages of the pandemic, if we do not make thoughtful choices based on the information we have available, we face a very real risk of a much worse situation in Wyoming. We can't afford that in terms of illnesses and health impacts, and we can't afford that for our businesses or other aspects of our lives either. It would simply be irresponsible. My approach as we move forward will involve taking a step at a time to allow us the opportunity to continually check on how things are going before we take the next step. The governor has been saying for a while now that we will be making decisions based on data and not dates. So let's talk about what some of the data points we are watching and we will continue to watch in the upcoming days, weeks, and months. First, here is some more information about the items listed on the graphic that we've shared on the screen. New cases. We watch how many new cases we see based on when we get the test results, when samples are collected, and when people report the date their symptoms began. Each of these dates gives us valuable information. Two is community spread. When new cases are found, we follow up with these individuals. Based on what they tell us, we can get an idea of how they were exposed to the virus. When it's not easily determined, that indicates community spread is happening. The percentage of community spread helps us know how widespread the virus may be in our local areas. The percentage of positives. All along, we have been getting far more negatives than positives in our laboratory testing. We track this percentage because it's an indication of how complete our testing is and gives us some idea of how prevalent COVID-19 is in our communities relative to other causes of illness. Hospital admissions. One of the biggest concerns during this pandemic has been the potential impact on our local healthcare facilities. So, of course, we ask hospitals to report information on how many COVID-19 patients they are treating. We have had 54 total reported COVID-19 hospitalizations among Wyoming residents, with about 16 current COVID-19 hospitalizations within Wyoming facilities. Bed capacity. We also ask hospitals to report their current bed capacity to us on a frequent basis. And finally, ICU availability. In addition to total bed capacity, the availability of intensive care unit beds is especially important as they are needed to treat the sickest of all patients, whether they are infected with COVID-19 or face other challenges. The color coding is intended to help give everyone an idea of how things look for each of these data points. Each data point will be carefully and continually evaluated. Along with these data points, it is also critical that we consider our ability to test people who may have COVID-19, as well as whether we have sufficient personal protective equipment or PPE to care for COVID-19 patients in hospital settings. We will also consider possible new information and other potential developments we can't foresee as we go forward. I'd like to talk a little more about testing capacity. Most people realize this has been an ongoing concern. There simply wasn't testing as early as we would have liked, and there hasn't been enough ongoing widespread availability of testing as we would have liked due to supply concerns and other issues. The overall lack of testing is a concern for us as we make big decisions about Wyoming's next steps. We know there are more cases out there than we have been able to identify, and so it's hard for us to give you a complete picture. This is one of the many reasons we have to be cautious moving forward. I do have some good news about testing in Wyoming today, though. The Wyoming Public Health Laboratory, which I oversee, has done a terrific job of ramping up their capabilities under pressure. I'm very proud of what my staff has done. We have had priority groups for testing all along, but a few weeks ago we had to stop accepting samples who were not within those priority groups because we were concerned about the availability of supplies we needed to run those tests. Since then, availability of private testing has improved, which is a very good thing. Fortunately, our supply situation has also improved, and so now we are able to accept samples from patients with symptoms, again, who are outside of these priority groups. We have sent a notice out to healthcare providers to let them know about this and hope that it is a helpful option. We encourage providers to expand testing of patients as supplies allow. I also want to talk to you about outpatient elective or non-urgent surgery and procedures. Though the state did not issue an order directing hospitals to discontinue elective procedures, we agreed with and we recommended that they follow the federal guidance to postpone these procedures in order to preserve PPE and staff capacity and to protect patients from unnecessary exposures. At this point, I believe they may proceed on expanding these services based on new federal recommendations in a phased process according to their plans and protocols based on the outbreak in their county, when reliable COVID-19 testing is available and PPE is sufficient, and in consultation with their local health officials. State-funded PPE that has been distributed can only be used for the COVID-19 response and not for these elective procedures. So where does that leave us with our public health orders and guidance? Working with the governor and the attorney general, I am considering our options for the next steps. First of all, nothing is changing before April 30th, the current expiration date of our orders. I expect to see some changes to allow some activities to resume that offer the least risk to our health, to the health of our communities first. I would also expect to see some of the restrictions in the orders extended. I know everyone wants to know the details, but we are not prepared today to answer all of those questions. I promise we will give more of a complete update in the next few days. At the same time, we are looking ahead to a time of less restrictions. We have seen 7 deaths in the last 2 weeks related to COVID-19 among Wyoming residents. This serves as a reminder as to why all of these measures have been necessary. It is also important to know that social distancing remains critical for now and for a while to come. I would also like to emphasize the importance of wearing face coverings in public settings for both the public and employees who work with the public now and moving forward. So please remember that they are not a substitute for staying 6 feet away from others whenever possible. We've talked a lot about who has the highest risk of hospitalization and death related to this disease, and that is important information. But the truth is, anyone can get sick from COVID-19, anyone has a chance of serious illness, and anyone who is infected can pass COVID-19 onto others. It could only take one person who may not realize that they've been infected to spread COVID-19 within a nursing home or another setting in which people could become very ill with COVID-19 with devastating effects. This is the kind of incident we have to keep working together to help prevent. Thank you, Governor Gordon.
Thank you, Dr. Harris, and thank you and the Department of Health and others, including the Secretary of State, for the immense amount of work that you've put into this, distilling this down to something that's understandable and that we can see as residents and citizens of Wyoming are making progress. These are absolutely essential. And with that, I would like to bring up the Superintendent of Public Instruction, who can speak a little bit about what we've been working on with schools as well. Thank you, Superintendent.
Thank you, Governor Gordon. I was going to end with, but now I choose to begin with, Governor Gordon, thank you for your steadfast and continued leadership. It's not easy to align decisions with respect to business, commerce, education, government, and healthcare, but you have done an amazing job, and it is in the best interest of Wyoming communities and will serve us well now and in the days ahead. Thank you, Governor. Health orders from March 27th that are entitled COVID-19 Guidance for Educational Institutions from the Wyoming Department of Health remain in effect. Under these orders, there is an opportunity for schools to work with their county health officials to provide limited in-person instruction for students in the greatest need, such as those on IEPs or others with special needs, so long as proper social distancing, hygiene, and enhanced sanitation are practiced, following guidelines from the CDC and the Department of Health. To the extent practicable, I encourage all schools to examine the feasibility of utilizing this flexibility for three primary reasons. Number one, all school district superintendents should be engaged in regular and ongoing conversations with their local health officials to determine if limited in-person instruction for students in the greatest need are warranted. Number two, varying degrees of students will need to re-enter school facilities throughout the summer. In order to prepare for that, the first step is discussing how to make it work for the special, or how to make it work with special populations. And three, in order to fully reopen in the summer, August, or next school year, I'm requiring all school districts to submit reopening schools plans to the Wyoming Department of Education before reopening. Clear protocols developed by each school district, approved by the local health officer, and submitted to the Wyoming Department of Education should be part of every school district's reopening schools plan. Exploring the special needs flexibility is the first step in creating that larger reopening plan. All of us should recognize that reopening schools to students does not mean going back to normal. There will be new and enhanced protocols for health and safety and precautions to be taken. There will also be a strong and ongoing partnership between school leaders, the county health officials, and community leaders from here on out. This is our new normal. Our schools are soon to receive federal Stimulus CARES Act money. School and community leaders should take care to utilize the incoming federal funds to mitigate lost instructional time with students and to build an education system that is better prepared to deal with closures in the future, namely with the use of blended learning or a mix of virtual and in-person learning. In the coming weeks, my staff and I will continue to provide guidance to schools, including providing a template for reopening schools and an application for receiving funds under the CARES Act. Lastly, and again, Governor, I'd like to thank you for your leadership. Dr. Harris, thank you for your steady guidance through all of this. And to the students, staff, parents and community members who are anxious to get back to school, please remember that learning does not cease because you're doing it virtually or remotely or through learning packets, and that there are so many things to learn in everyday life and throughout this experience. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Superintendent, for yours and others' work. Your department has been very engaged in this entire process, and it is very encouraging that we have a process now to think about how we open schools in the fall, what we can do, and I just want to thank you for your leadership as well. I have to say, I think this is probably one of the leading protocols in the nation. You've had a terrific team of Dr. Harris, Department of Health, Department of Workforce Services, Department of Family Services, and Department of Education that have worked tirelessly to bring this up, and yet there's still more to do. So there was an author who said, a goal without a plan is just a wish. What you've got here is the plan. It is not a complete plan, but it is growing. It is expanding. So there are things like rodeos that we are looking at now. There are things like public events that we are looking at as we go forward. There's a myriad of different opportunities and chances of how this can work. So I want you to know that we're being transparent. We are giving you the data as we see them. We're looking at these plans and rolling them out so that we can see how they hold together. One of the questions that's come up on constantly has been, what about overnight camping in our parks, something we're looking at. And then others have said, we want to open for our county businesses, but we don't want anybody from out of state to come. Can't do that. So as we look at these plans, we've got to figure out, and that's why we're putting so much into the counties, the local county commissions, and most importantly, the county health officers to come forward with plans that make sense. And we will not be driven by politics. We will be driven by the measures that you see here, and they are solid, and they will be available. But before I take questions, I just want to reemphasize that our goal continues to be protecting the public health and getting people back to work again. And as I've said and heard over and over again, please, if you're working, don't get careless. If you're playing, don't get careless. When Dr. Harris says that people can be asymptomatic and then infect an entire production line, as we saw at JBS or at Smithfield or some other plants, we know what a devastating blow that can be to our economy as well as our health. So it is important that we get back to work, but we get back to work safely, thoughtfully, considerately, and with commitment. We plan to release more information in the weeks ahead, including new orders that we've discussed today and additional guidelines for business. The Business Council is going to be doing more and more of that outreach to each industry. We're also looking at how our COVID dollars can be applied. So with that, I want to thank you again for joining us today. We plan to provide county-level support on the metrics that will help guide decision-making for county health officers, and those county metrics will look just like these. So you can see exactly from one county to the next how measures are being done. And with that, let me pause and say that there are some questions we have submitted from Tom Coulter at the Wyoming Tribune-Eagle. Though Wyoming's primary election falls later in the summer than most states, do you think a complete shift to mail-in voting is necessary for our August primary? And have you had any discussions about potential changes that could be needed for the general election? I will tell you that Secretary of State's office has been diligently deploying new equipment all around the state. I'm not going to speak for his office, but I will tell you he has been the head of the task force that has been looking at all of these issues. And now he's working on our sort of coordinating board. And so these issues are very much on his mind. We hope to be able to carry out an election just as we hoped. It's a long ways away. But I will tell you that the Secretary of State is the proper person to ask on that. And a question from Nick Reynolds from the Casper Star Tribune. I was told by a member of Management Council today that the Department of Treasury has not yet issued guidelines on how to spend their shares of federal aid. In our case, $1.25 billion in new funding. Have you heard anything new on this front? And as state and local governments continue to be impacted, have you been in contact with members of Wyoming's delegation in Washington? Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has expressed reluctance to bail out state and local governments. I will tell you, just a few moments ago, I just got off the phone with Congresswoman Cheney talking on this very topic. We do have about a little bit of guidance that's come out over the last couple of days we're going to be reviewing and looking at. I speak with Senator Barrasso and Senator Enzi on a regular basis. That, I think, will become much more clear in the days to come. And so, Nick, thank you very much for that question. And a question from Olivia Kenna of Sweetwater Now, Rock Springs. Here in Sweetwater County, one of our county commissioners, Wally Johnson, is arguing that now is a better time than any for the state to tap into rainy day funds. Do you anticipate having to use any of the state's budgetary reserves during the transition to reopen the state? Commissioner Johnson's point is a well taken one. I will tell you that our budget gurus are working both on the LSO, the Legislative Service Office side, and on our side. You know that we issued a freeze for new hirings, a curtailment on any contracts over $100,000, and I also told all of our directors to start finding significant cuts. We are continuing to work on that. We will not know the dimension of how much revenue we have lost. We can think about it, but the dimension of that won't become evident until next month. We have a Craig that will come out, and I would reserve my answer to this question until we know just exactly what kind of shortfall we anticipate seeing. And a question from Brendan LaChance of Oil City News in Casper. Camping at Wyoming State Parks has been closed. Is there discussion about relaxing such restrictions? How will COVID-19 impact state parks moving forward, specifically as it regards events that have been planned as we move into summer? And Brendan, I think I answered that to a bit. That is very much in discussion right now. I wasn't up there last weekend, but from reports, Kurt Gowdy was full, lots of people moving around in the day, and we are thinking about relaxing some of the restrictions. Frankly, one of the big reasons why we considered closing those was to make sure that we didn't have congregations there at night with bonfires, et cetera. I think people are beginning to understand what this new normal is going to look like for 2020, and as such, probably have better practices and behaviors. And it is encouraging. I want to go back to say how much I appreciated Dr. Harris' leadership on this. Dr. Harris, you know, looking on the maps, and I'm going to touch wood, it is exciting to see that we're at the back of the pack. So thank you for your leadership on all of this, and I love the feeling of success. So with that, I'll open it for questions from the phone.
Hello, Governor Gordon. This is Isabella from the Wyoming Tribune Eagle.
Hi, Isabella from the Wyoming Tribune Eagle.
Hi. So I was just wondering, you know, you're talking about, you know, modifying the orders and kind of with those modifications going to May 15th. Can you possibly elaborate on what those modifications will look like?
Yeah, and I think actually Dr. Harris sort of referenced this. The modifications are going to make it clearer. They already sort of had this language in them, but it's going to make it clearer that the county health officer can submit a plan to the state that will allow for variances under using these metrics And if the Dr. Harris concurs with that, I'm not going to speak for her. She can answer this as well. But the question was for how are these going to be modified. That's one of the modifications you will see. So it will allow for more flexibility within the orders, both up and down. I think it's important to say when this was first striking Wyoming, I think our concern was making sure we didn't move too rapidly, but that we moved quickly enough to be able to avert a major catastrophe. And we also wanted to allow counties the flexibility, if they wanted to be more restrictive, to do that. This allows for a much more dynamic process based on measures that we can all see. If you want any more clarification, Dr. Harris can. I'll let Dr. Harris speak to that.
Thank you. Yes, in addition to giving the counties flexibility to adapt based on the data in their own county and the outbreak situation in their own county, we do again anticipate easing some restrictions on certain types of businesses. The exact way that will look is one of the pieces of information that will be forthcoming. I know it's frustrating not to have that right now, and we'll do our best to get that out early next week so that the businesses and the public health officials can prepare, but that is what I anticipate.
Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Next question.
I have one more, if that's okay, if no one else has.
Sure.
Awesome. I think this one is for Dr. Harris, possibly. When you were talking about testing supplies and that, you know, we recently got more, and we're able to kind of test more of those non-priority patients that were originally outlined by the CDC. Can you talk about what does that look like? How many more testing supplies do we have right now, and how long do you think that'll last?
Sure. So the question was more information about, you know, the testing supplies that we got that allow us to expand the number of patients that we're testing per day. There are a couple components to that answer. I would say our laboratory, in particular our chemical testing laboratory, has been producing viral transport media in large quantities and has sent that around the state, as well as swabs. So those sample collection kits that can be used for testing are in greater supply, meaning that providers are able to test more patients. The second component of that is the reagents that we need in the laboratory to be able to run the test ourselves, as well as the equipment that can make testing more efficient. So we've been able to increase our supply of all of those things. Of course, you know, exactly how many tests and exactly how long it will last depends on how many tests we get and if we continue to get the supplies we need. But we certainly, you know, feel confident now that we are able to test a large number of patients. We want to test patient samples and are asking providers to send them to us.
Awesome.
Governor Gordon, this is Mark Bentley at 307 Net Radio in Buffalo.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Did I understand that the schools as such will not reopen this school year?
So, Mark, I'm going to turn you over to Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jillian Balow.
Thank you.
Thank you, Governor, and thank you, Mark. In answer to your question, schools should continue to operate under the COVID-19 guidance for educational institutions from the Wyoming Department of Health and other health orders that extend school closures. Under the guidance from the Wyoming Department of Health, certain variations in those orders can be created or developed at the local level for special populations, depending on the local health officer and school district leaders making that determination based on a number of factors. Before schools reopen, whether that is this spring in a limited capacity or during the summer months in a limited capacity, or in the fall, all school districts must submit a reopening schools plan to the state that is approved not only by the local and state health officer, but also by the superintendent of schools, as well as myself, the state superintendent. So in answer to your question, schools are to remain to continue implementing their adapted learning plans that are good through the end of the school year. If schools and local health officers deem it appropriate to bring back special populations in safe ways, according to the guidance from March 27th, they may do so in a very limited manner until there's further news, perhaps after May 15th and perhaps not. So currently we will continue to follow the guidance of the governor's, or excuse me, the health officer's orders, as well as the guidance for educational institutions from March 27th.
Thank you.
Okay. The question from Craig Blumenschein that was submitted via online is, what about private schools? We do not have authority at the State Department of Education over private schools. However, the health orders for education institutions also apply to private schools and other educational institutions. So I want to be clear that the guidance is from the Department of Health, and that any plans to reopen should be done in conjunction with the local health officer. However, for a private school that does not receive state funding or funding that flows through the state does not need to submit a plan for reopening in an educational format if those if the other criteria are met through the Department of Health.
Thank you, Mark, for that question. And just one other piece of this. I think this sort of speaks to the challenge of this particular virus. We anticipate that we'll still have this virus in the fall. And so I want to congratulate and thank the superintendent for having the wisdom and vision to say, let's get those plans in shape early so that we know what school is going to look like when we come back next fall. Next question.
Hi, Governor Gordon. This is Camille Erickson from the Casper Star Tribune.
Hi, Camille.
Unfortunately, we received confirmation today that about 300 Wyoming workers at three Powder River Basin mines have been laid off, and both Peabody Energy and Navajo Transitional Energy Company cited the tough economic conditions exacerbated by COVID-19 as reason for the decision. As you well know, any layoff at the coal mines affects everyone in Wyoming, but particularly these families and coal-dependent communities. I'm interested in first just allowing you to respond to this recent news, and then also, as we look forward to our recovery, what measures you anticipate taking to support these communities that surrounding the coal mines in our state.
So, Camille, thank you very much for that question. If I understood it correctly, you received news of a significant layoff for a mine about 150 or so workers. I have to tell you, I was on the phone with that coal company a day or two ago, and we started working with Workforce Services to make sure that we had resources available and ready for those affected workers right away. I will say the company is providing a severance package and also additional support for career placement and other aspects. None of that brings back those jobs. I think what What is really unfortunate, and I think this goes to the theme that we've been talking about, the issues that were important for Wyoming in September, October, and November continue to be important to Wyoming today. And one of those issues is the decline of coal in our electric generation capacity in this nation. Last year was the lowest amount of electricity that's been generated since 1993, and coal's share of that production fell from 23% to 17%. Sadly, that was something that that particular coal company could not support, and so these are big issues for Wyoming. We are continuing to try to find ways that we can pivot those very talented workers into different jobs, and actually we've been looking at ways to bring better retraining, which is also another piece of how we're dealing with education, our community colleges, and our university. What are the resources that we have for providing the kinds of educational skills, job acquisition skills that they need? So we're working on all of those fronts, and thank you for that question. And again, our hearts go out to that community. I talked to Louise Carter King yesterday and said the state stands right with you to make sure that we ease the pain.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Next question.
Good afternoon, Governor. Jim O'Reilly from Bigfoot 99 Radio.
Hi, Jim.
Thanks for this opportunity. I suppose this is a question for Dr. Harris. It has to do with something the doctor said earlier about so far the number of negative results from the testing have exceeded the positive. And if I'm correct, we have about less than 5% positive on the tests that have been done so far. To get that number to trend down on the dashboard that you created, wouldn't you have to increase the testing? How does Wyoming ramp up the amount of testing that's done? And do you need to have people come forward that aren't showing symptoms to be tested to do that?
Thank you. So the question was, how do we increase and ramp up the amount of testing that is done? I think that we still have a lot of room to go in testing everybody who has symptoms compatible with COVID-19. I'm not sure that there's even enough capacity to do that right now, but I think that we can, based on both the testing collection supplies and the testing supplies we have in our laboratory, expand the range of symptomatic patients that we are testing. So I think that's really the first step in ramping up how much testing that we're doing. Asymptomatic testing, we do know that asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic people can spread the virus, but should really focus testing on symptomatic persons at this time.
And just a quick follow-up, what is your feeling about testing for the virus antibodies?
Thank you. So my feeling on testing for the virus antibodies, I think that, certainly there could be some utility for that in knowing who has, who has been infected with the virus in the past and who hasn't. We did send a health alert notice out to Wyoming providers yesterday and offered advice and shared some information from the FDA specifically about antibody testing. It's important to note that there has been no antibody testing approved for diagnosis of COVID-19. And so antibody tests by themselves should not be used to diagnose somebody with COVID-19. There's also lacking evidence on the utility of this testing in the management of individual patients. The performance of these tests is still highly variable, and the majority have not been reviewed by the FDA in terms of their sensitivity and specificity. So how good are they are detecting antibodies to COVID-19, and how do we know that they're detecting antibodies specific to COVID-19 and not to other coronaviruses that are more commonly circulated in the population. We're also been aware of versions of these tests that are just downright fraudulent, unfortunately. So I think that there is the likelihood and possibility and utility of future broad applications of these tests, but we have to make sure that we have a good test first, and I just don't think that's available at the moment, and so we're not quite there yet.
And if I may, just one more quick follow-up. As far as easing the restrictions on a county-by-county basis, are you looking for the numbers? Let's just take the testing numbers, for instance. Are you looking for those to remain stabilized, or are you looking for those to improve before restrictions are eased?
Yes. So are we looking for these measures to improve or just stabilize before these restrictions are eased? We definitely want the counties to be, you know, looking, and they are already looking at these same types of measures that we're looking at a statewide basis. I think, you know, we are certainly looking at trends for these measures and not specific numbers because, you know, there's no data to suggest that when these measures get to this specific number that we're okay to make a change or open something else up. And it's also important to consider the entire picture of what all the measures look like as a global way versus one specific measure, and also to keep in the background that we need to consider testing capacity and PPE as well. So I think it's really a mix of all those things that we'll consider when we think about county-by-county variances.
Thank you very much.
And Jim, just to follow up, that's one reason why we wanted to have this dashboard, is so that people could track with that and really engage. It's interesting, as I've talked to Pete Ricketts, the University of Nebraska is helping to inform how they're approaching lifting their restrictions, which they'll be looking at doing in western Nebraska differently from elsewhere. If I talk to my colleague in Montana, Governor Bullock, he's saying, you know, we're going to see how this goes. Yesterday was a story about, you know, how he was lifting his restrictions, and essentially he's saying, you know, we got to wait a month before we really understand if these have been good or bad. So bear with us. Governor Little, very much the same. Governor Polis has said, look, we've seen what you've done. We know it works. So we're going to go to do what you are doing right now. So I think all of us are understanding this dynamic. The analogy of building a plane while we're flying it, I think, is very real. Next question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, yeah. Hi, this is Andrew with Wildfile.
Hi, Andrew.
I have a question for Dr. Harris. We're talking about listening restrictions, and having some successes this week, but we also just saw our death count really spike. I was wondering, Doctor, if you can put the increasing deaths this week into the context of kind of the overall big picture timeline of the disease in Wyoming, and just talk about why that doesn't change the way you guys are moving forward, if that's the case.
Thank you. And I think I heard most of your question, which is, you know, in the context of having 7 deaths over the past 2 weeks, you know, how do we interpret that, and how do we move on and consider easing some restrictions based on that? You know, that's absolutely one of the reasons why these are difficult decisions to make, and why we need to be thoughtful and measured in our approach. And as you said when you were asking the question, you know, to consider things as a whole and in a global way, it's important to keep in mind that most of the individuals who did die had been sick and hospitalized for quite some time, had been diagnosed several weeks before their death. And so we believe that we certainly, of course, have to consider that. Obviously, the preventing people from dying is the entire purpose of our activities in these outbreak and the measures we put in place into this outbreak, but need to also look at overall hospitalizations, current hospitalizations, the amount of new infections, the percent due to community spread, you know, all of the different pieces of information we have as we decide when and how to move forward.
Thanks, Doctor. If you don't mind, a question for the governor as well. Governor, you talked about speaking with a coal company about layoffs. Both Peabody and MPAC made layoffs today, so I was just wondering which company you spoke to.
I spoke with Peabody.
Okay, thank you for clarifying.
Thank you. Next question.
Hi, Governor. This is Catherine Wheeler with Wyoming Public Radio.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi. This question is for Dr. Harris. I'm wondering, how is the department effectively keeping up with contact tracing as cases continue to come in, and is it prepared to keep up that level of contact tracing as restrictions are eased?
Yes, thank you for that question about have we been able to keep up with the contact tracing and how do we plan to do that as restrictions are eased. Absolutely, yes, we have been keeping up with the contact tracing. We've been doing that all along for all of our laboratory confirmed and probable cases. I believe that contact tracing is absolutely critical to continue going forward, no matter how many cases we have, as long as possible. We have about 5 staff members who regularly do this work and have reassigned many others in the department to help. The help from the county public health offices has been absolutely essential and incredibly helpful for us. So we will continue to keep those systems in place moving forward as we begin to ease restrictions. We're also beginning to consider ways to expand that. We don't have any specific estimates for that at this time, but have explored, multiple avenues to expand our capacity should we need to, given the importance of contact tracing during this outbreak.
Thank you.
Manx, next question.
This is Tom Halbert with the Jacksonville News and Guide.
Thanks, Tom.
I have a question. I don't know if it would be for you or for Dr. Harris, but a question on messaging. Now that we have a few deaths in the state, press releases about those deaths have included information that they've, I think, all had pre-existing conditions that made them more likely to have a critical illness from COVID-19. And I'm wondering if there's a risk of creating a confirmation bias in people who see themselves at lower risk if they're not in those demographics by including that information when reporting the deaths.
Okay, thank you. So, yeah, the question, by reporting whether people have underlying health conditions or not when we're reporting deaths, does that is that a confirmation bias for people who think they don't have these conditions and therefore are, unlikely to get severe illness and die from COVID-19? When we put information out in public releases, we carefully consider the amount of information that's, needed for the public to know so that they can, make the best decisions they can about their own health, as well as, protecting the protected health information and the personal information of the people involved. I think it is important for the public to know, how the risk factors that we understand affect whether somebody has a higher risk of getting severe illness from COVID-19. We report that in both our confirmed and probable cases as well as in the deaths. It's certainly not the only factor. We also give estimates on the relative age. We give some race information, underlying health information, age information on our website. But I agree with you, and I think we've tried to emphasize in these press conferences and in our messaging as well that really anybody can get severely ill and can die from COVID-19. We have seen that. We have seen, in other places, young people without any underlying health conditions die. As we collect more data You know, we'll be able to publish that in an aggregated way to ensure that we're protecting the information of individuals to be able to give people an understanding of what's happening in Wyoming. But I absolutely agree with you that while it's important to give people information they need to understand what's happening in Wyoming, it's also important to let them know that really anybody can be sick and die from COVID-19.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, please.
This is Dustin Bleisnefer, reporting for Wildfile.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you speak some more about the coal industry? And is the state kind of evolving its response to what's an unprecedented shrinkage and contraction in the coal industry? I think the total of job losses with today's announcements is over 400. Is the state prepared for this, or is it kind of changing its response as it goes?
Well, thank you for that question. And the quick answer to was the state prepared and what are we doing to consider the transitions and contraction of the coal marketplace. I don't think anybody's kind of prepared for the kinds of losses that we have seen periodically over the last couple of years, all very substantial. This one is particularly painful in that it's driven so much by, a complete downward trend in the entire economy globally, but particularly in electric generation capacity in the country. And as I said, our percentage has dropped from 40% a few years ago down to 17%, but over year, from 23 to 17 on a declining generation capacity. So those are really troubling and very problematic. We've never indicated that the state is going to bounce back from this with any ease. It's going to take a lot of diligence. To what we are doing now in our business task force is looking at what sorts of new enterprises can be brought into Wyoming. Are there capacities for manufacturing? Are there new technologies? Are there opportunities here? And I'll just be straightforward about it. COVID-19 hit urbanized areas probably pretty strongly. There may be reason for people to think about relocating businesses to places like Wyoming. What are those opportunities? How can we be attractive and how can we be helpful? This is really a formative time for Wyoming. In so many ways, and I think it is important that we have our eyes open and look towards our future. And I'll take one more question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Governor?
Yes.
This is Max Cotton with Wyoming News Now. You announced your plans to reopen a few days after President Trump announced his guidelines for states. How much do those two plans or guidelines coincide with each other? And also, how much, when formulating this plan, did you communicate with federal health officials?
Well, thank you. The question was that our plans for, and I'm going to say easing, not really reopening, because we really took pride in the fact that Wyoming people were able to take the initiative and do the right thing. So we never had to go that final step of a shelter in place, except in a couple of locations. But let me, when President Trump issued his plans for opening America with the gating criteria and some of the phase one stuff, we took a look at it. Most of the stuff in phase one, as far as businesses being open, already was what we were doing in Wyoming. The gating criteria, I think, are very important. Those criteria are the ones that Dr. Harris was talking about with testing and so on. So it was helpful to have their ideas. We have been continuing on this course of Wyoming needs to stay open. We need to have our industries working, our miners mining, our industries being able to participate, perhaps get more market share just because we have been more open. So I will say it's been helpful. Our response has not been guided by that. I respect President Trump and the team that he's assembled, and it's always helpful, the advice they give. But we have been working on this plan, as I say, regionally with the governors that neighbor this state and some other governors in the country as well. And so with that, let me wrap up and say thank you all for being here today. It is interesting. I think about that wonderful quote that is attributed to Winston Churchill, that those that don't study history are compelled to repeat it. If you look at the history of 1918 here in Cheyenne, Governor Hu went ahead and put the same kinds of restrictions on the population. The population eventually decided that they didn't want them. They opened up the businesses again, and within a few weeks, suddenly the Spanish flu descended on Wyoming in an unprecedented way. We are working every day to make sure that we allow for the freedoms that people in Wyoming expect and want to have. I have relied on their common sense and their sense of responsibility, not to endanger their neighbors, not to endanger their congregations or others. And so we have been successful in relying on that, and I anticipate that Wyoming will continue to look to these metrics, see how we're doing, and we'll continue to lead the nation as we come out of this into the new business that we'll expect for the next year and a half or so at the earliest. But Wyoming will be a leader. Wyoming will be successful, and it is absolutely essential that we not have a recurrence of this COVID disease. So with that, thank you all. Thank you, Dr. Harris, Superintendent Balow, for being here. Thank you for attending, and God bless you, Wyoming. Thank you for all you're doing to keep us all safe. Thank you.
Okay, and that was a live broadcast of Governor Mark Gordon's press conference coming to you from the Capitol Building in Cheyenne, right here on KPIN Radio.